Welcome to the Awaken Therapist podcast, where we explore a holistic and transpersonal approach to therapy. In season three, you'll hear live demos, expert teachings, and dynamic interviews to inspire you to awaken transformation in yourself, your clients, and the world. I'm your host, Harmony Quiker. As a psychotherapist, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, I created this podcast to empower you to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. To learn about our trainings, community, and resources, check us out at awakentherapist.com. In this episode, I'm joined by my dear friend and renowned author, Sue Patentole, who shares her heartfelt journey toward a life rooted in purpose, creativity, and gratitude. Sue has written 13 self-help books, including her wildly loved first book, The Courage to Be Yourself. Our conversation explores the healing power of mindfulness, the liberation that comes with authentic self-expression, and the transformative potential of psychosynthesis and gestalt therapy. Sue also leads a beautiful guided meditation for therapists, a practice in self-reflection and emotional presence, which you can access on Patreon. Yesterday, I was reminiscing about the first time I met you
in the park.
In the park. I remember so vividly because I was struggling. I was really in a hard time of life with new babies and a marriage that I wasn't happy with, but I really had this passion for writing and your bright, sparkling presence and encouragement was the medicine that I really needed at the time. I get tender and teary just thinking about that. I appreciate you so much.
Yeah.
You've had just such a meaningful and impactful career, in my opinion. I admire you so much. For those listening, I just would love to hear a little bit about your path and your journey.
Well, similar to yours, probably. Harmony. I was born in 1940, so it was a whole different time then. And I was a good girl. And so I followed the good girl rules, so to say. And I married the right guy. And he really looked good on campus and paper. And it didn't turn out that we were very compatible. But of course, I believed it was all my fault because that was. If something was wrong in a family, it was the woman's fault, in the Midwest at least. And then my discomfort just got so big, and so did my shame, and so did my blame. But he helped me out. He fell in love with my, or lust, with my best friend, quote unquote. So it was perfect, actually. I didn't so much think so at the time, as you can imagine. It took about 4 years to really get divorced. And my boys at the start of it were very young. They were 5 and 7, maybe, or even younger. And of course, nobody in my family had been divorced. And my dad told me that if you divorce him, I'll never speak to you again. Woo-hoo! My mom was supportive, but I really kind of waited until my dad said, get rid of the son of a bitch. And that was telling in itself. So I had to do something. I mean, I had a BA with a minor in English. And so I went back to graduate school. It was just magical. I was thinking about graduate school, and I was just driving down a street, Santa Clara Avenue, and I saw a sign, University of Santa Clara. And I drove in, and they had a master's program for working and, you know, people that started at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which meant I could get childcare. And it was counseling psychology was the name of the degree. And in that, of course, that was like taking a rather large hammer to a small walnut, just crack me open like crazy. It was small. And they told me that it was full to begin with. And so I was auditing. But the head of the program took a shine to me and he said, put her in. So I was then a full-time student. And that took that was like a 2-year degree, and that was the changing point in my life. That's where I learned, basically, I'd always been interested in metaphysics and stuff like that, but to blend and marry the metaphysical philosophy and the we are naturally good philosophy with psychology underpinning was a lifesaver. I mean, just a lifesaver. And then I met my husband now and moved to Hawaii to be with him. And we went to a Unity church. And I asked if it would be okay if I created a counseling center. And they said, yay, do that. And so I did. And the minister said, and we've got two people in our professor from the University of Hawaii, and I think somebody who's a social worker or something. Well, it turned out that this guy was a psychology professor at University of Hawaii, and my friend Bobby, whom I'm still connected with, had been a social worker for like 14 years. And the three of us came together. Turned out the professor wasn't the greatest person in the world, so he ended up not staying with us. But the two of us for, 6 years, had that counseling center. And when I came back to California, I went into private practice. And then one day I was reading a book, and it was a self-help book, and it's an old book, and you'd probably remember the name. But and when I finished it, I was at a silent retreat of my own, and I was down at Asilomar in California. I finished reading it. The last three pages were entitled Breaking Free. And I said to this book, for God's sakes, you have spent 300 pages telling me what the hell's wrong with me. And now you do three telling me what to do about it. And I threw the book against this river rock fireplace and said, God knows where it came from. If I ever write a book, I'm going to make it practical. And about 2 years later, the muse got a hold of me, and honest to God, Harmony, it wouldn't let me go. I was in private practice. We had a dear friend and I were co-leading a woman's group, and I had noticed that everybody, no matter whether they were stay-at-home moms or career women or whatever, really had the same problem, and that was having the courage to be who the heck they were. And out of that came my first book, The Courage to Be Yourself. And then I got bitten by the well, you know that feeling. You just have to write, and so I did, and that's how it started. And that was back in the day when writing was very different. I mean, we went on tour and we had, book signings all over the United States. It was just a whole different ballgame. Very different. And now, at the age I am, and it's all so much technologically driven, and it makes me crazy. Like, I was talking to my publisher the other day, and she said, really would like you to go on TikTok. And I thought, oh, God, I have never even seen TikTok. My daughter shows me some things, and, but I don't want to do TikTok. I'm 85 years old. I want to pet my dog and, be a prayer chaplain at church and do quiet stuff. I don't want to do that.
The world has changed so much.
Oh.
Yeah, even since I started, it's just fascinating. I really loved how you said that when you went to graduate school, you just got cracked wide open. I see that often with students. It's like there's this craving that we don't even know what it is that we're drawn to, but this kismet happens where we arrive in the program that we're supposed to be in, and life changes from that moment forward for so many of us, not all of us, but for so many of us. I know that you also studied psychosynthesis.
I love psychosynthesis. I learned in graduate school, but I learned doing therapy and taking the adjunct things that were offered. Like, I was laughing this morning because I was thinking that we're going to talk about mindfulness. And I was thinking one of the first times I even heard about mindfulness, I was still living in Hawaii and I was taking lessons from a kahuna there. And when I was moving to California, I said, can you sum up, Abraham, can you sum up your teachings? And he said, in a paragraph, and he said, I can do it in two words, pay attention. Whoa, okay, that is really the bedrock in terms of my growth and awareness and mindfulness is pay attention. And the psychosynthesis, I don't know, it just made so much sense to me. And it was so gentle and so kind. And the teachers were both such living examples and fun people. And one of them just scared the dickens out of me. Oh, she was so authentic. And I was still really very much, and I still do, but very much careful about what I said. Very, very much the need to please and that kind of thing. And Lenore was not. She scared me, but she also showed me that you can have both. You can hold. I wouldn't ever be quite as scratchy as she was, but nonetheless, it was obvious she was a wonderful person and she had a big heart and she said what she thought without any qualms or really much caring about the outcome. And my caring about the outcome quotient was relatively high at the time.
One of the things that I love about psychosynthesis and Gestalt is the way that it supports mindfulness by externalizing what is so loud at the forefront of our mind. Like when we can't see beyond those thoughts and we're so hyper-identified, just getting some space and being in a different type of relating with our inner world can just unlock so much within us.
Identification with something can just take over everything. I mean, we can then be that and inhabit that. And that's why I think mindfulness and paying attention, being in the present moment, breathing, all that stuff helps us ground and step back and get a better perspective. And I really love the subpersonality aspects of psychosynthesis. It was such a simple and profound concept too. And it was built around the metaphor of the symphony orchestra, which is also very, very easy to relate to. I mean, we've probably all seen a concert and all heard the tuning up. That's what we feel like inside again. Yeah, we can.
And then the work creates the integration of coherence, where we're working together from a sense of wholeness.
Yeah, each doing our part, each trying to do the very best they can. But of course, if those parts are out of tune or unhealed, then they can't do the very best they can. So to me, it was such a beautiful avenue for identifying what parts of me needed help.
Hearing your history and story about being the good girl, I have a very similar conditioning. And I think I feel similarly about you that people say about me, which is, I have a hard time believing that. It's like, because the growth and the like discovery of one's authentic voice, it's hard to see all the work that went into that.
I was talking to somebody the other day and she said, so what do you do with, your subpersonalities and stuff? And I said, absolutely nothing. They just play so well together. And I don't really need any more to identify. I mean, Ms. Perfection is one of them that I had, and she just doesn't care anymore. She just says, do it, honey. Well, however it turns out, it's going to be fine. Or not, oh well. And of course, yeah, I mean, I learned that when I was, what, my 30s? And that's been a long time ago. But I think that's one of the messages that therapists need to give to people is practice, practice, practice gently, gently, gently. Wholeness and integration wants to happen. It will happen. You give it half a chance, it will happen. We're born for it. Oh, I'm getting all thankful, totally grateful.
Yes, yeah, the inherent intelligence that knows, that wants.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So beautiful.
And in my situation now, where the caretaking of my hubby is, it's spasmodic. I mean, it's pretty general, but sometimes it's really a lot and sometimes it's not. But the alignment that I'm working on now, everybody's on board. Everybody's in me. Everybody's on board. And everybody gets to bitch and moan if they need to. The other day I was in the bathroom and I was thinking, I just came home from a motorcycle trip with my son. And so I'm all blissed out and everything, and down the Oregon coast, and I'm all blissed out. And of course, incoming is a little sometimes difficult re-entry. My little re-entry lock room was not available at the time. So I just kind of re-entered. And I was in the bathroom and I was talking to myself, of course. And I said, honey, this alignment of inner and outer is a little bit shaky right now, but it was with a just a friendly reminder, not the shame-laced and judgment-laden way I used to be with myself. And so I said, so let's breathe, okay? Just the breathing, as you know, everybody listening, and you especially, know that it just brings about coherence. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about inner and outer alignment. You know, let's move back into coherence. And the beauty of that is, now that I can do that, then the acting nice and loving is actually feeling nice and loving. It's such a relief, Harmony. It was so hard when I was grappling with that. I unfailingly acted nice because I wanted to. I made that choice. But I didn't always feel nice. And that was such a dissonance to my soul, I think, that it was very, very uncomfortable and didn't do myself or him any favors. And I worked really hard on that. So I guess, yeah, I guess I'm still working.
I hear that though too, is like noticing your nervous system response. It was stressful to the re-entry, and then to regulate your nervous system and be present with yourself as opposed to being reactive from that other place.
Well, it wasn't 100% successful, but it got there. I mean, it was 98.3, but most of the time.
You had mentioned before this piece about our soul wants goodness for us. And when we slow down and pay attention, we can find our way there. It might be messy. Messy is fine.
Slow down, pay attention, simplify. I think that's really one of the hardest things to do. But well, especially at your time of life, when you are raising kiddos and you are doing your career and you're writing and you've got a relationship, and that's a lot. That's a lot.
I feel that in my body and my bone when you say that. At this point, Sue, have you written like 15, 16 books?
13.
13 books. And last time I was at your house, I saw you working on another one. And of the books that you've written, which one is your favorite?
The Mindful Woman was probably one of the most, the word gracious comes to mind. It was such a gracious process. It was my publisher just said to me at one point, what are you writing about next? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, what are you working on? And I said, well, mindfulness. And she said, yay, do that. And it was just such a beautifully orchestrated, easier than most experiences.
And that one was recently republished.
Yeah, it's there's there was a series of the woman's book of courage, the woman's book of strength. And so they wanted to put it into the woman's book of mindfulness. And so basically, it's just a 20 plus year update, rebreathing different life a little more years of experience, you know, that kind of thing. You know, same boat.
It strikes me as I'm listening to you how, for me anyways, writing is such an integrating process.
Oh.
Yeah.
I write all the time.
Yeah.
I never have been much of a journal writer, but
Me
like one
neither.
of the things I was doing on the back of the motorcycle was I was, well, titling clouds, but I also wrote some haiku, you know, and just on the back of the bike. It was just so, even if you're inland in Oregon, the trees are just like cathedrals along the highway, and we put on over 1,000 miles, so that was a quite a few hours of nothing I had to do except stay upright.
It strikes me, though, I'm wondering if you agree with this, that when we are mindful in this way and we've found more inner coherence, the mind, instead of being hyper-identified with it, naturally integrates and creates.
The mind plays. And for me, and it sounds like for you, words are my playground.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because my good girl couldn't write the book because she was too scared about what everybody would think, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, what did you do to comfort her as you were writing and she was active?
Well, it's like what I was saying in the beginning, Sue. It was really seeing myself in your reflection. Seeing like a different possibility for me through the way that you saw me, that helps me see myself differently. Does
I've
that make
always seen you as so bright and so shiny and so angelic, angelic in such an authentic way. So, I mean, you've just always been to me a bright and shiny star, Harmony.
you showed me a new potential in myself through that witness, along with any self-doubt I had what the moment I met you, Sue, it just kind of dissipated. It really did. It was like magic.
Yeah, that probably was magic.
Well, I don't think I ever told you this, Sue. When I was 20 years old, I saw a psychic. And she told me, you're going to meet somebody and she's going to connect you with an editor to help you to write this book that you're contracted to write. And I was 20 years old. I'm like, whatever. And the moment I met you, I'm like, oh, that's who she meant.
Mommy, that is just wonderful. Thank you for that gift. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you. If you found this episode meaningful and want to hear the full conversation, you can access the entire episode by joining us on Patreon. Your support helps make this work possible and allows us to continue offering deep experiential content like this. As a member, you'll also get access to extended sessions, discounts on trainings, and behind-the-scenes discussions on the therapeutic process. To join the community and learn more about our trainings, visit us at awakentherapist.com or click the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.